I had dinner recently with the Secretary of State on Paterson, and he made the statement, "We are obsessed with Alex Salmond." I wondered why he was so obsessed with Alex Salmond, a harmless little fellow up there in Scotland. Well, he said, "He's a wily old fox, and just keeping an eye on him," he said, "is such hard work." So I have with me today somebody who's going to cast some light, I hope, on this whole Scottish independence campaign, the significance of Alex Salmond, what he's trying to achieve. Can he do it? Is he within the law? Is he outside the law? Is he acting ultra-virus? All of these issues will be raised in the course of this interview. Professor Graham Walker wrote a book in the 90s and referred to the relationship between Northern Ireland and Scotland as intimate strangers. Now, are we effectively then, Professor Walker, now potentially dealing with a rerun of this intimate strangers when it comes to the relationship between Westminster, England, and Scotland?
Well, I think that we are looking at a situation where the vote for independence could well, in 2014, go Alex Salmond's way. Now, we've got to look at the implications of this, and I think for people over here, the implications are profound, particularly for unionists. Unionists have made a great investment, shall we say, in their Scottish ties. They mean a lot to them. It's a way that they have of showing that they belong to the British family. Scotland is privileged, I think, in terms of their set of relationships. The amount of cultural activity around Ulster Scots in recent years, I think, is a sign of this. The unionists value this relationship, perhaps above all others, in these islands. So you can imagine, I think, the sense of trauma that might be occasioned if the vote on independence went the SNP's way.
Could you just halt there for a moment, Professor Walker? You said the vote in 2014. Are you saying that Alex Salmond is going to win out on this one, that the Prime Minister's desire to have this vote earlier is not going to obtain?
Yes, I think that Salmond will get his way on the timing. I think the Prime Minister miscalculated in the sense that he appeared to attach strings to his offer to amend the law to allow the Scottish Parliament to have the referendum. Now, had he said simply that we are going to pass the necessary legislation to allow you to hold a referendum and then negotiate the other matters, I think he would have been wiser. However, he has got the backs up of Salmond and many Scots over what looks like interference and attaching conditions.
Hold on. Do you not sound a bit like a Scot?
And undoubtedly, and that's what I am. So, and I think that this is a perennial theme in Anglo-Scottish relations. This sensitivity, perhaps oversensitivity, that Scots have about interference from London. But it has to be remembered that when devolution was set in place, there was a tacit understanding, if not legal clarity, around the idea that Scots would not be interfered with, certainly over the areas that they had devolved control over. So I think that Salmond's going to win this. I think that he's going to win the question of when the referendum's going to be held. That's not to say that he's going to win the referendum.
Hold on a minute now. I take it you're following the news. Did you hear what the Lord Advocate, Lord Wallace, said yesterday? He effectively said that should Alex Salmond move to any referendum, he would be acting ultra-virus. He would be at variance with the law, that he is not empowered to move towards a referendum, right or wrong, legally.
Strictly speaking, he's right. And I think the bulk of the legal opinion would agree that at the moment Westminster holds the cards in terms of the legality. But political reality is another matter. And it would be ill-advised of the UK government to actually appear to stand in the way of an SNP government, which is such an overwhelming majority at Holyrood and Edinburgh, to appear to stand in their way and not let them stage this referendum.
Are we dealing with political reality or creative ambiguity here?
Well, we may get to creative ambiguity further down the line. I think we will, because it's not really in the UK government's interest to appear to be standing in the way of this. And they've always said that the SNP has earned the right to hold this referendum, but they want it done properly. They want it done in accordance with the law, and that's fair enough. But attaching other conditions to it, I think, is politically unwise.
But Graham, didn't they say it confident within themselves that it wasn't ever going to happen? Isn't that the whole problem? As the Secretary of State said to me, they are obsessed with this man, Salmond. Hasn't he outfoxed them, outwitted them, these young slickers down in London?
Well, when I think the shock to the system really was the last election. It was one thing in 2007 when the SNP were a minority government, because obviously the room for manoeuvre was severely circumscribed. However, after 2011, after last year, the SNP's majority is such that the penny must have dropped in London that a referendum was inevitable.
Now, if we go back to what the Lord Advocate has said, Wallace, he said that should Alex Salmond move down this road towards a referendum in 2014 or when, he will actually be at variance with the court, there will be an appeal, and he said potentially that appeal would mean that there cannot, a referendum could not take place then.
Yes, I mean, he's laying it out in those terms just now so that they can reach a compromise. I think that this is the game that's being played. And I think a compromise will be reached, because it is in everybody's interest to get the referendum held, but to get it held in such a way that the result is clear. And, of course, there's many other questions about what the question is going to be, who's going to be the referee in the referendum, should 16 and 17-year-olds have the vote. All of these issues now are up for negotiation. So it's all part, I think, of a negotiation package, which I think will have to be tackled.
Right, OK. So presume that Alex Salmond gets his way. There's a referendum. Presume he gets the result that he wants. From your perspective as an academic and as somebody who wrote the book Intimate Strangers, vis-a-vis the relationship between Northern Ireland and Scotland, could you try and crystallise for my listeners what you think the implications might be for us here? Or will there be any implications? Will it undo the umbilical cord in any sense of Northern Ireland and the United Kingdom or Great Britain?
Well, I think that the Scottish relationship is so much part of the identity of Ulster Unionists, people in Northern Ireland who wish to maintain the union. I think that the Scottish identity is very important to them. I think that the implications of Scottish independence on Ulster Unionism are therefore profound. I think the United Kingdom would look a very peculiar place without Scotland. It would look a very odd entity. I'm not sure that Northern Ireland would feel as comfortable within it. It would feel, I think, much more dependent, perhaps, on England, without that sense of the Scottish cousins to link up with, perhaps. And there's all the various cultural and historical ties that Ulster Unionists make so much of, which I think, in terms of their own self-image, would be harmed by Scotland being independent.
What might be the ramification, implication, though? Is it conceivable that you might find a unionist nationalism emerging here?
It's not inconceivable, because I think that there's a certain logic to devolution towards accumulating greater powers and greater autonomy. Now, I know that that hasn't really happened over here yet, but that's not to say it couldn't happen in the future. The idea of greater fiscal autonomy, for instance, in Northern Ireland is not too outlandish. Already, of course, the Northern Ireland executive has been talking about the possibility of corporation tax, or the power to adjust corporation tax, being devolved to them. Now, if similar measures are come in the future towards to Northern Ireland, it could change the relationship between Northern Ireland and the centre, particularly if there is no Scotland in that relationship anymore.
Do you think the Salmond has the capacity to kill off a derogation for corporation tax for us in Northern Ireland? Because he seems to have stuck his oar in here when it comes to the Treasury on this issue.
Well, It's possible, but I don't. I think that what this devolution or independence debate rather is going to do is to get people in Northern Ireland, possibly also Wales, to think more closely about the powers that they have, what powers they may want in future, how they see devolution evolving. Already, I think it is happening in Wales, where the Welsh have acquired more legal powers than they had initially. And we could, I think, see similar developments in Northern Ireland around greater powers.
Professor Walker, you've been around a long time. You've read a lot of history. You're probably a lot more familiar with history than I am. There have been many battles, north-south. If Alex Salmond is winning, if he is going down the road of independence, is it conceivable that he could get hit with a truck? Is it conceivable that suddenly some scandal could break which could topple the apple cart? Are these things possible, or am I being unnecessarily conspiratorial?
Anything is possible, but I think that the economic climate, such as it is at the moment, would make the independence option a risk, to say the least. And I think a lot of Scots are taking that on board, and will take it on board further down the line.
What about the oil? What about the oil, though? The natural resources, eh?
I think there's always going to be that feeling on the part of many Scots that the oil revenues were wasted for so long by the London government. There's a great deal of resentment around that question, and therefore the other side of it is that if Scotland has 90% of the oil revenues, as many people think she should have, then, of course, that is a very promising basis for an independent state. And of course, there's the example of Norway that the nationalists are fond of talking about there too. But even there, even around oil, there's a great deal of uncertainty about oil prices, uncertainty about, you know, how long we're going to have it. It's perhaps not really a firm basis for the future, or certainly not as firm as the SNP would like to suggest.
As a Scot, do you want to break the link?
I don't personally. I am in favour of devolution as a process. I think that devolution is a long way to go. I would like to carry on in that process in the meantime.
Why? What's the advantage to you?
I think there are advantages in the United Kingdom. I like the idea of that expansive United Kingdom identity. United Kingdom is a multinational entity. I think that that has advantages. I quite like the idea of multiple identities rather than just one.
Well, you might be shocked, you might be surprised, you might be l'étranger, you might be one of those strangers of whom you spoke at the very start of this programme. For EamonMalley.com, I want to say thank you very much indeed. Boy, will we be watching this with interest. It's a fascinating story. And I suppose it really is what constitutes serious politics. We play at politics here, but this is serious politics. The break-up, potentially, of the United Kingdom and independence coming to Scotland. Professor Walker, thank you for your time. Good afternoon.